Welcome to the Hockey Show on ESPN Chicago. The very latest news and analysis from the NHL and Chicagoland hockey. Presented by Four Winds Casino and brought to you in part by Nancy's Pizza and your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Now here are your hosts, Barstool Chief and Pat Boyle.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome in to the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. Is it really, though, the Hockey Show? It's
Bears Day.
It's Ben Johnson Day here in the city of Chicago. What a fantastic day for Bears fans, for Chicago sports fans, for this radio station, your home of the Chicago Bears. Well, got that messed up already.
Maybe someday.
But it was great to just sit back and watch and listen to Ben Johnson, Ryan Poles, Kevin Warren, and feel true excitement about what's can be on the horizon for this franchise.
I would have settled for listening to Poles and Warren and just not been mad. Like, that's been, like, every time they've talked for the last year and a half, I'm just in a perpetual state of anger having Johnson in there and just doing a departure from everything that the Bears have done, where they bring in consultants. Hey, Ernie Accorsi, you go find a guy. Hey, Bill Polian, we don't know what we're doing. You go find a coach. So letting Ryan Poles and Warren go out, give the bag, right? I assume he got a big bag.
Oh, he got a big one.
Well, there's a number out there?
I've heard 12 to 13. Kevin, Z-Pack, have you heard the official number per year for one Ben Johnson?
I don't think it's been made official. I know Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, reported through the grapevine they're hearing around 13, 14.
Wow. Good for him.
Holy shnikes.
We're both having this. The McCaskies won't miss it. Whenever they sell the team, whatever, you're going to get your billions and it'll be fine.
How impressed were you? And again, I'm not always, do you have to win the press conference? But I do think there's things you can glean and take away from that. Mm-hmm. Because how a coach identifies with the media and with the public is a glimpse into how they're going to identify and communicate with their players.
Totally. And you can see he's got even a little sense of humor when they walked him in Hallis Hall yesterday and the whole office was cheering for him. And he's like, all right, everybody back to work.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, we're going for it now. So I loved everything about Ben Johnson.
And his jab at Matt LaFleur today. I love beating Matt LaFleur twice a year. That's the 2025 version of, we're going to capture the NFC North and, you know, we're going to beat the Packers.
Never give it back was the Poles line when he was hired. And I think they have, this year they got one win, which is against the Packers, but hasn't exactly gone the way that Poles probably drew it up in that respect. But now it's like, hey, if you got the coach and you got the quarterback and all you need is probably, you know, 20 new guys.
A good number.
Yeah,
a good number. I think he's going to make them better.
I do too. I think Caleb's going to be fantastic.
Oh,
and I loved.
He was so excited.
He was. I loved everything about Caleb. Do you see the his quote today where he showed up dressed like Neo because he's just been
in
the Matrix.
That was fantastic.
So that was great. The haircut.
He's doing bits.
Yeah, he's doing. I love a good bit. That was a good bit. So, so maybe, you know, even Caleb, even more comfortable in his own skin. He seemed like he was absolutely miserable this year. He took third most sacks of all time. So I hope they're able to fix the offensive line, play on time, have a real innovative play caller. And even that moment where someone in the media asked him about the stumble play.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, you like that one?
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, actually we did. Why don't you come up with cool stuff for us?
Oh, there were so many points where he's flexing a little. But like, he's smart. He's intense. Ben Johnson is detailed. How about the way he addressed Komet and Caleb and DJ?
Yeah.
You know,
kind of the leadership council,
right?
There.
And first of all, when you get players come in from out of town, I think DJ was at Disney World, and
I know Cole was in Atlanta,
and Caleb was in Florida.
Yeah,
and it was like, you know, get comfortable with being uncomfortable,
which is another departure
from
the Bears. Because they have a lot to fix. And when you look at that offense, and it's just everything is ad-lib. The plays don't make sense. The route tree never made sense. So now you're going to have a guy who's like, hey, we're doing it this way because of X, Y, and Z. And if you do it wrong, we're starting over. We're going to do, you know, we're going to do things right. And I think he's going to fill out a staff. I think this is that's the other thing, too, because he hasn't really filled out the staff yet. You would think people seeing clips of this and seeing the energy and everybody is still excited about Caleb, that's going to be attractive to get the right quarterback coach, to get the right OC, and just build out this thing as a professional.
It's the reason Ben came here.
Yeah.
I mean, he made that abundantly clear.
Yeah, so it's nice to have a quarterback.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's not even, like, debatable.
Right, and that was the big fear, that he was going to go to the Raiders, and Tom Brady was wooing him, and then it's like, well, you're going to go to a place with no quarterback at all? Aiden O'Connell? No. Come to Chicago. It's the Bears. It's one of the best cities in the world, and we got Caleb Williams. Like, let's go.
All right, so there's so many little nuggets that came out of today's festivities at Halas Hall, but did you hear Kevin Warren tell the Bears beat reporters about going out to dinner this weekend, and a Bears fan recognized him and sent over a drink and a napkin with a note on it that said, hire Ben Johnson?
Yeah, no, I did not see that clip.
Okay, so, and then Kevin Warren said he's going to present that to Ben Johnson. Presumably he's already done that. So to bring this back to the hockey show, if you could send Kyle Davidson a drink and a note on a napkin,
I think it would be a stiff one. I think he's dealing with a lot.
Yeah. And what would it say on said note? And again, I know, Chief, you usually, I've seen your blogs.
Yeah.
You tend to air it all out. So I don't know if it would all fit on one bar napkin. It might need to be.
I really do like Kyle Davidson.
Oh.
You know, so yeah. I don't think he's the biggest problem over there. So,
oh, I'm not saying he is. This is your
words
wish
of encouragement,
list, dude.
Encouragement.
This is like,
I would probably, you know, I'm not the most religious person. Find an appropriate Bible verse. You know, it's always darkest before the dawn or something like that. Like, just keep going. Just keep going. Keep your head down. You know, he's filling out a staff we saw this week. And I just feel like this year has not gone the way that he wanted. He talked about a step forward. They're horrible. He's had to fire a coach. I'm sure he didn't want to do that. Like, seemed like he was all in on Luke Richardson when he hired him, and it just didn't work out. And it's been a very, I was going to say up and down. It's been a down year. It's been really kind of a down year. So I hope it, for me, for Davidson, just be words of encouragement. And then, you know, maybe just don't be afraid to swing for the fences. You know, you got all the draft capital. You got your star boy in Connor Bedard. It's time to, you know, he got Bertuzzi. He got some of the in Teravainen. You need some legit big guns now.
Right.
And go out and get them. So just swing for the fences.
That kind of would be, that would be my situation. Like, sign Mitch Marner, something like that.
Yeah, you're in on the Mitch Marner talk.
I am. I just, because it's, all-stars don't come available all the time. And this one is unique because there's so much talent on that team, and that maybe their cap hamstrungs that they can't sign him. They would love to, even though the cap is going up.
My gut says that he'll sign there. I because Tavares is coming off the books anyways, his $11 million. I think they'll find a way to get something done with Marner. So
what about Rantanen? I think they're not going to let...
I, that's like you said.
I mean, those are the two. Those are the two that
those are the big difference maker guys. And,
you know,
and we've talked about this many times. If they were building out their model for this rebuild, they were like, "Hey, we can get Leon. We can get, you know, player X, Y, and Z."
Kirill Kaprizov in 2 years,
right? And it's these guys. They just don't get to market. So one by one, they've been re-signing. So we'll see. You know, Marner had a tough time in the media after the last playoffs, because he goes missing in the playoffs.
He does.
But he's having another.
So do the Leafs, dude.
Yeah,
I mean, like, they don't get out of the first round.
That's
so
true.
Why is it all on him?
Matthews. I mean, I could pull it up, but Matthews does seem like he produces more. And then
look at Mitch's numbers. He's almost a point per game guy.
Yeah.
And again, they've only been in basically first round playoff series.
Yeah.
So it's
yeah,
like
won one playoff series with this core. Yeah.
I mean, like, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, and Matthews only had he had 4 points in five games last year, so in the playoffs. So I don't know what Marner did. But yeah, I mean, they got a lot. But Matthews is he's the guy. He is the guy.
Absolutely. That's it's why they made him captain.
Right.
They took.
Yeah.
I mean, that's almost unheard of, taking the C off one. And
who's
and
already get, there.
Yeah, I mean, that's unheard of.
Yeah.
All right, so back.
Marner had 3 points in seven games. So Matthews was hurt at the beginning of that series,
too.
So
right.
That,
and
that was
I think his medical situation is something to really look at here going forward.
Yeah.
Okay, so talking about the Ben Johnson situation and being so excited about what you hear, what you've seen him do in Detroit, and I don't think that's getting played up enough. Everyone's like, well, why would you want a first-time head coach? And I'm like, dude, he had the perfect apprenticeship.
Yeah.
A perennial loser. A franchise that was... I'll say it, below the Bears.
There's only a few of those.
And there aren't many.
Yeah, it's like the Jags,
had never
the
gone to the Super Bowl ever.
Mm-hmm.
And he watched how that and played an integral role in how they resurrected that franchise and took it from a laughing stock to the number one team in the NFC. Now, they did not reach the heights that they wanted to reach, but let's face it, it wasn't for a lack. I mean, Jared Goff was the throw-in
for the Stafford,
to the Stafford deal. He was the Kyle Orton in the Jay Cutler deal.
Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And no one thought, like, I didn't think.
I thought they'd be drafting a quarterback.
Oh, I thought he'd be there 1-2 years max.
Okay, yeah.
I never saw him that falling in love with the city of Detroit, them falling in love with Jason Goff or Jared Goff.
Yeah.
And then re-signing him to, one of these huge mega quarterback deals in the National
Big
Football
time. I mean, Jared Goff might go down as being one of the, like, the guy who made the most money ever as a quarterback because he was the first overall pick, so you get big money coming out of the draft for that. He got a big contract from the Rams, and he's got another big one from the Lions. So Jared Goff
Cousins has to be a
Cousins too, but Goff, like, two guys that you would think would be at the top of that list.
Not the top of the pageant.
I think it's amazing. And then if you also think about when they're building their team, people were kind of snickering at them when they took Jahmyr Gibbs high. Then, they traded T.J. Hockenson in division to Minnesota. Then they went out and got Sam LaPorta that high.
Yep.
And then it all worked out beautifully because he's the piano player. He's the conductor of the orchestra. He pulls all the strings and gets everybody to succeed inside of his, like, he makes everybody better. So you look at a guy like Cole Kmet. I love Cole Kmet. He went this year several games without a target. That's not necessarily on Cole. That to me is scheme. And because Cole has shown that, I mean, they paid him. He had a good year the year before. And with
there were reports this week or in recent weeks that Kmet knew what his role was going to be in training camp and wanted and asked the Bears to trade him.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, so like that's the other thing. Like, there were so many warning signs that this coaching staff
going to be a disaster
was not equipped to be a coaching staff in the National Football League, and there were warning signs everywhere.
I mean, how about last year where the defensive coordinator went missing and they had to fire? I understand, but it was
an HR violation before he went missing.
I understand. But it's like you're trusting Eberflus to build out a staff, and within 3 years he's had to hire two defensive coordinators, had three offensive coordinators, then he gets fired, and the guy who was his quarterback's coach gets promoted to head coach. It was a disaster from the word go. This does have a very different feel to it.
Okay, so
a stupid makeover.
We're on
that drove me crazy.
We're on this high, this Ben Johnson Bears finally did something that's sensible high.
Mm-hmm.
And we know in the National Football League how important coaching is.
Yes.
I'd say
it's the most important of all the sports.
I would think it is.
Yeah.
And the OC and the DC, but especially that offensive mind in this day and age of the National Football League, and having that great head coach, and then the fact that you have both in Ben Johnson, made me think, how important is the head coach in the National Hockey League? We always seem to be a little behind the times, like analytics, you know, kind of just started coming in vogue here in the last few years in the National Hockey League. To the credit of the Blackhawks, they've been at the forefront of building up their analytics department and things of that nature. But how important, as, you know, at the end of this season, you're going to evaluate Anders Sorensen, and then they're going to do a full-bore search for the next head coach of the Chicago Blackhawks. We'll see if Sorensen does enough to get the job. But in general, how important do you think coaching is in the NHL? And is it getting more important as time goes on here?
Yeah, I think if you look at the two coaches we had this year, they play wildly different systems. They're getting the same results at the end of the day. But under Richardson, it was much more safe defensively,
right?
That 1-2-2, and it helped a guy like Seth Jones. It really stunted a guy like Connor Bedard, and really every other forward on the team. And now you're seeing what the system can do. The system change can do, where it's hurt Seth Jones, but at least they're scoring goals. And to me, that's more important at this stage. So coaching definitely matters. I wonder how much it matters. I don't think Sorensen's going to get the job. I'll say that now. I like him. I don't think he's done enough here to be like, this is our guy going forward. But
no, it's 20 games in. But like,
but it's been a bad 20 games. This to me is like a time where I don't want to run it back again. I want to have someone who comes in is more about culture. And like, that's why
Luke was culture guy.
Luke was supposed to be culture guy, but that clearly didn't really play out. And it's this to me.
Well, that's where I get back to how important is coaching, because I said to you, whether it was off air or on air, you know, we get into defensive minded coaches in the National Football League, especially in football. We're like, oh, he's off McVay's tree. You know, he's a defensive minded coach or whatever. We don't talk about that a lot when it comes to the NHL. Luke was a stay at home 20-year NHL defenseman.
Yeah.
He saw the game through the lens of a defenseman. Doesn't surprise me that he looked at the lack of scoring that he had on that roster and said, the only way I'm going to be able to win games is to try to keep it close, keep it 2-1, 1-1 going to the third.
Hope Connor, someone does something special.
And hope someone does something special here to pull one out. And we had that ridiculous stat of the first 30 games, 29 of them.
They're
was
in it.
The rest. Yeah. They didn't have anything to show for it. They ended up losing most of those games. But and then enter Sorensen, who's got a developmental background and has worked with high-end offensive players like Willie Nylander. And I like the way he's connected with Connor. He seems like he's unlocked something. They finally put together Bertuzzi and Bedard.
Yep.
Lately, they have put Nazar on that line. And while Nazar's not lighting up the score sheet,
his speed's a factor. Yeah.
He's getting in on the forecheck, forcing D to make quick decisions. Mm-hmm. I like a lot of what I've seen. Now, there's a ceiling to this.
Mm-hmm.
But then I go back to what I was saying about how Ben Johnson commanded the room. And I do think when I look at Spencer Carberry and I see like Jim Montgomery during the Road to the Winter Classic, and I see the way he commands a room, I do put a lot of stock in that these days. Maybe I'm a meatball.
I think you're on the money. And I do think that both Richardson and Sorensen, I've said this many times, they have a unique situation where the leadership voices, they're all on 1 and 2 year deals, and they're older guys who are, you know, way past their prime, but they brought them in to be those culture guys. But I do think it's hard to be like, you know, you're not really part of this. So you can have the good habits, and I love Foligno, I love Pat Maroon, but is their voice going to carry the same weight as your star? And Connor's, you know, obviously too young to be that guy. So it kind of has to come from the coach. And when you look at the roster and the trade deadlines coming up, a lot of these guys that are brought in to be the veteran voices, the leaders, they're going to be gone. Okay, so next year or as soon as March. So you're going to need to have this turnover of the leadership and the culture setting to this younger group, which I think will ultimately be a positive if they have the right kind of guys in there. But when you have all these young guys, you have an opportunity to have a coach that can be maybe a little bit more domineering in culture setting and grab the room by the scruff of the neck kind of thing. And I do think they need one of those guys. So who that is, I don't know if it's – maybe it is Sorensen. I don't really know how he operates in the room. But to
or more, maybe they value him more in Rockford because we are still in this developmental
maybe.
Stage.
Yeah, that could very well be. And everyone that I've talked to speaks very highly of him as a guy and
I just think it's been a big jump, right?
Totally.
You know, he got
and the roster is bad.
Yeah.
So it's like, what's he supposed to do?
And that brings up the question: is the coach you're hiring this next cycle at the end of this season, whether it's Sorensen or somebody else? Is it under the guise that you've still got basically to bring along all these young guys, or are we starting to knock the door on expectations are higher? We need systems tight. We need to maximize what we have. We can't let players like Connor feel defeated for four consecutive years, things like that.
Yeah.
Like the philosophy of Kyle as he approaches this search is interesting because they're at that point, you know, they're not where they were when Luke got here, but they're not anywhere near the finish line.
Right. It's almost like next year was the first year with Joe Maddon where the Cubs, was it 14 where they really struggled with him?
Well, 15.
15 went to the NLCS.
Yeah.
So I couldn't remember what was Joe Maddon's first year. Was it 14
I think it was
or
around 15.
Okay.
14 or 15.
Because 14... we got the internet here. But that's like you want an established guy that everybody will respect who can, ideally you got a guy who can do both. Like Paul Maurice can do both. Joel Quenneville, people say he wasn't good with young players. That was always wrong. Like you can,
John Cooper.
There are guys like that who can do both. So I do want a guy with a resume. I wonder how hard it's going to be to attract an established guy like that.
Just like Caleb attracted Ben.
Mm-hmm.
I do think, again, it takes more, and there's nowhere near where the Bears are at and how you can flip things in the NFL.
Yeah.
The NHL, we talked about it a few weeks ago. Connor Bedard came first. They're building this from the elite player out instead of what they did in 2010. Where Kane and Taves were near the finishing touches.
All the complimentary players were there. Sharp. I mean, they brought in Hossa the second year, but Sharp,
Keith Seabrook,
Versteeg was in the mix, Dave Bolin, Dustin Byfuglien. They had a ton of talent, and then Taves and Kane walked into a great situation, and they performed perfectly. And they were the great yin and yang where you had the defensive, big, hulking, two-way center that Taves had some offense to. And then Kane, was the electric guy. He was a perfect teammate duo on the ice, perfect marketing duo off the ice. Like they really won the lottery in more ways than one when they got Patrick Kane to go with Jonathan Taves. So they do need to fill out the rest of that roster. And I hope some of these prospects hit. And maybe we're talking to Corey Promen later today, and hopefully he can be a ray of sunshine for us.
Yeah, we are commercial free the first 30 minutes of this show. We're presented by Four Winds Casino. Barstool Chief Pat Boyle with you. Corey Promen will join us at the bottom of the hour. He's the prospects analyst for The Athletic. Everybody's starting to put out their rankings for the June draft. We'll get his thoughts on that. And also, he put out his rankings for 23 and under, the current prospects in the National Hockey League. And so we'll see where all the Blackhawks prospects kind of shake down. But let's go to the phone lines. Let's start with Tom in New Jersey. Tom, thanks for holding on. Welcome to the Hockey Show.
Thank you. Welcome. Happy Wednesday. Always look forward to talking to you. And I was going to call relative to coaching, given everything that's happened this week with the Bears. Please hear me out. I'm not going to get into a political discussion, but I do feel very strongly that Coach Q should be given another chance. Our culture, our society is built on second chances. I know what happened. was a terrible thing for the Hawks. I have three kids and five grandkids. I understand the severity of what happened. But given what happened in Washington on Monday, everybody in this country is entitled to a second chance. And there's no doubt that Coach Q built that team into what it was. Dennis Savard was a great player. He was not a great coach. Jeremy Collison, not a great coach. Luke Richardson, not a great coach. You talked about and hit upon the importance of having a great coach there. So what would be the problem in giving Coach Q a second chance to lead this team back to where they were when he left?
All right, Tom, thanks for the phone call. I'll start. First of all, I do believe in second chances. Mm-hmm. I hope at some point, if Stan Bowman can get a second chance in Edmonton as their general manager, I certainly think Joel should get a second shot. He's the second all-time winningest coach in National Hockey League history. His opportunity has not come to fruition as of yet. Getting a second chance in Chicago is a completely different story.
I would say that that's impossible.
Oh, that's
that
impossible.
He comes here.
Yeah,
I don't necessarily agree with that. I don't think he would want to do it either. It's one of those things, you can't go home again. You're never, no matter how much success he has, if he were to come back with a Bedard-led team, it's not going to be 3 and 6 years. And like that, those runs, if you look across the history of the league, they just don't happen. You see, Vegas wins one. They're in around the mix. They haven't won since. Colorado hasn't won since. It's very, very difficult to do in the cap era. So I don't think that would be the best fit. I'm willing to give a Barstool Chief guarantee that he has a job next year.
Really?
Somewhere in the league, Joel Quenneville will be. Look, the Flyers were interested. Dallas was interested.
How about the Rangers?
I think that they might be. I think he's going to have the opportunity to be very selective. Toronto wanted him before they moved
settled
over
on Berube.
Before they got Berube. So I think Joel will be in the league. He deserves to be in the league, and I think he'll have the opportunity to kind of pick and choose. So I know he was linked to Detroit for a little bit. But I think he's holding out. Like that, when he went to that Panthers job, he knew what he had when he went there. Barkov and all these guys. So I think he's going to look for an opportunity like that, whereas he's looking at a team that's, hey, they got a lot there. I can take them to the next level. I think that's what it'll be.
That's the other thing when I was thinking about Ben Johnson and good players, great players want to be coached hard.
Yeah.
And I think Caleb Williams is going to accept that challenge. He needs to be coached hard. There's some fundamentals, and they're going to, as he said, strip it down to the studs and build him back up and build the offense around him.
That was so refreshing to hear, too. What a novel concept.
What a novel concept that is. No, instead. No,
we're going to run the offense we give to Geno
Smith. We're going to give Caleb the entire arsenal of our offensive plays, and then we'll pair back if things don't go well. What made you think it was going to go well?
Yeah.
Anyways, I digress.
Yeah.
I think when you look at, you know, Kane and Taves and the players on that team, you know, Q coach hard.
Oh, yeah.
And he was stingy with ice time, and he wasn't afraid to call somebody into his office and have it out with him. And, you know, I think a guy like Connor wants to be coached hard, too. And you've got a coach, you know, up until last year, he didn't need to play defense at any level. He's literally learning on the job at age 18.
Yeah, take the minus, I'll still be a plus four.
17.
Yeah, you know, like, if he messes one up, he's still going to be, playing in junior, he's still going to be a plus three on the night.
Yeah. All right, so coming up, we are going to talk to the Athletics prospects analyst, Corey Pronman. We're going to, you know, could the Hawks end up drafting another defenseman with the top pick? Or right now it looks like they could have 1 through 3. And we'll also talk about the current Hawks prospects in the pipeline. Where do they rank? It's all coming up next. It's the Hockey Show with a little Bears talk as well. Happy Ben Johnson Day on ESPN 1000.
The Hockey Show. When you're at home, don't miss Chicago's only show dedicated to hockey fans. Tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
We're rolling on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. We are presented by Four Winds Casino. We're also sponsored by Chevy Drive Chicago and Nancy's Pizza. With Ryan Brandel, a.k.a. Barstool Chief, I am Pat Boyle. It is our pleasure to welcome in the prospect analyst of The Athletic, Corey Pronman. Corey, how you doing tonight?
Doing well. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you for stopping in by. Let's start with, you know, where things are at with the, you know, everybody's popping up with their draft rankings right now. And, you know, everybody thinks that a lot of people think Matthew Schaefer, the defenseman, is at the top of that list. Considering what the Blackhawks have done in recent years with Levshinov and Korchinski and Renzel, do you think if they have that number one overall pick or two or what have you, and Schaefer is available, do you think that is the type of player they would draft?
I think he has to be heavily in the conversation, and I understand that some Chicago fans would hear that and not be thrilled because they're hoping for a little bit more skill in the organization. But Schaefer, to me, I'm not saying he's the guy they would pick or they will pick, but he's so good that you have to at least seriously consider him. I mean, he's on that same prospect tier of guys like, say, like Miro Heiskanen and Jake Sanderson at the same age in terms of just the incredible skating ability for a guy that size. He moves the puck really well. He has significant offense. He competes hard. He's a guy who you project as a legit star number one defenseman in the NHL. And I've never heard any NHL team say that they have too many number one defensemen. So I think you absolutely have to talk about him. Like you mentioned, those three guys, Levshinov, Renzel, and Korchinski, all fantastic prospects, particularly Levshinov. But I would rate Schaefer ahead of all three of them in terms of just his NHL projection. That being said, while I do concur that I think he is the best prospect in this draft, I don't think he is number one with a bullet. This is not a Bedard prospect. He is not a Macklin Celebrini where he's one and there's nobody close to him. I think there are several forwards in this draft who are absolutely in the conversation with him. He didn't enter the year's number one prospect. It just happened to go that way based on this strong play the first 6 months. So I absolutely can see a scenario where 12, 18, 24 months from now, somebody else could potentially pass him.
It would drafting him in your eyes be kind of an indictment on a Kevin Korchinski or one of these other guys? Because then you spent a high pick on a guy who maybe projects in the long run to play 15 minutes a night and third pair minutes on your team.
Yeah, I think Kevin will play a little bit more than that. But, yes, I don't think his development has gone extremely well. Even Levshinov, he's an excellent, excellent prospect, but he's not exactly carrying it up in the American League this year. He's still a very young player. I expect with time he's going to become a really excellent pro. I think they still like Korchinski a lot, so it's going to be a balancing act there. But I think at the top of the draft, the talent differential can be really large between one player and the next. You know, in the 20s and the teens, you can start thinking about positions a little bit more seriously. At 1, 2, and 3, maybe Chicago doesn't see it this way. Maybe they think the difference between Schaefer and maybe a Michael Misa, James Hagans, Porter Martone, or others is really small. But usually the top of the draft, people think the talent gaps are significant. And if Schaefer is your clear best player, I don't think you screw around with that.
Corey Pronman from The Athletic, the prospects analyst for The Athletic, joins us on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. All right, Schaefer is injured, so his stock, you know, it's going to probably hold where it is, and then we'll see if any of these forwards surpass him. Everybody talks about James Hagans. Is he your... You know, if you were ranking the forward group, where is he in that forward group? And could you see him ultimately surpassing Schaefer as best available player?
I think there's five forwards who are all in that conversation. It's Hagans, the BC centerman. Then you have Michael Misa, the center at Saginaw. Porter Martone, the winger in Brampton. Caleb Denoyer, the center in Moncton. And then Anton Frundell over in Uregarden, who I think are all in the conversation. Hagans, for me, is, you know, he's a dynamic centerman. He's an absolutely fantastic skater. He's full of skill, but he's on the smaller side. And I think you wonder, okay, you know, as a former NTDP center, that he gets compared to Logan Cooley and Jack Hughes quite often just because of his play style and his size. To me, he's closer to Cooley than he would be to Hughes. That's still a great, great player. But I think you're going to look at Chicago's situation here, a team that already has Connor Bedard down the middle and quite frankly, have drafted a lot of smaller forwards. And I do wonder if it's close just in a similar way, we're going to talk about the positions here between whether they take another defenseman. I think the question is, do they take another small forward with a really high pick, or do they look at a guy with a little bit more size like Martone, like Miso, like Denoyer?
Now, I'm looking at your prospect pool rankings, and you have Macklin Celebrini, number one, Carm Bedard, number three. I said on our podcast that Celebrini might end up being better, and I've been getting killed on the internet by people. What went into that that ranking, and how close are those two?
And they are very close. I absolutely can see it go one way or another. I think Bedard's going to outscore Celebrini throughout the course of his career. I think, you know, this is going to be a guy who can, you know, hit 80, 90, 100 points. I know the goals maybe hasn't been as prolific early on in the career as we thought when he was in junior, but I think he's going to score a lot of goals. Could be a 40-goal scorer in the NHL. Just an absolutely fantastic offensive player. But I think you look at Celebrini and you think that he's going to bring a lot of offense, as he's shown in his first NHL season. But I think he's going to be a matchup centerman too. I think he's, you know, he's a great skater. He's super competitive, super intelligent. And I think he's going to be, like, you know, the kind of guy that stays, you know, Barkov's been for Florida, and maybe even a better version of that when it all tops out. You know, he's the closest thing to Sidney Crosby I've seen since Crosby came up out of the queue. I think it was just Macklin, I think, is just an absolutely fantastic hockey player, and there's really no clear weakness in his game.
You've got Artem Lebshunov in your Tier 3, ranked 22nd. You know, he's still kind of like year two or so in North American hockey. What have you seen thus far in the AHL from him, and where do you think his ceiling is? Is he a two? Could he potentially be a number one?
I think that's absolutely a possibility. I think, you know, he had some bumps there in his first pro year at times. I think he's been a little better lately, and obviously when Korchinski has been down there, at times he's taken the power play time away from Lebshunov. At times they've shared it. And then obviously when Korchinski was up, he got to play a little bit more. You know, whenever you watch Lebshunov, the skill, the offensive instincts really stands out. He's a good skater for a guy that size. Like, you watch him, you see all the tools he has, and you kind of feel pretty confident he's going to be a pretty good NHL player. Is he a one or a two? I don't know at this stage. I think a top pair defenseman, though, a guy who can run a first power play, is definitely the likeliest projection right now, just based on how talented he is and how much he's accomplished in a short period of time. I mean, this is a guy who only, I think, 3 years ago was playing junior hockey in Belarus, and now he's in the American Hockey League and was such a great player in college. So I'm still really optimistic about Lebshunov. Is he going to be a star? I don't know. Probably wouldn't say that at this current stage, but I think he can be an excellent NHL defenseman. And you mentioned even Korchinski and Renzel. I mean, even Alex Vlasic's pretty young, and I really do like this D group they're building in Chicago, and it could be a pretty formidable top four down the line.
Yeah, and I would say the other thing from your rankings from a Chicago perspective is that there's two guys who weren't included. One's Frank Nazar, and the other is Aiden Thompson. Thompson just was named the Hobey Baker watch list or finalist. Talk to me about those two guys, and specifically about Nazar and why he didn't make your top 139.
Yeah, I think Frank's always been a guy I've struggled to rate, even going back to his days in the program or even in Michigan. I mean, obviously he was so good in the first half in the American League. He was one of the better players on Rockford, earned the call up there in Chicago where he's been since. Great skater, super competitive, creates a lot around the net. Whenever I watch Nazar, I wonder, you know, at that size, is the skill level elite enough to really be a significant, you know, top six winger? Is he going to be a second, third line center in the NHL on a winning team? I'm not sure I've seen that. I think this is going to be a guy who can bring a lot of energy and be a really likable player. But I do wonder if the offense, even though he showed the offense in the American League, just looking back to his years in junior and college, and just knowing the guy, how his play style, I see him more as a really hardworking bottom six forward, more than a guy who is a top six. I'm sure Chicago fans disagree. I'm sure the Chicago management staff disagrees. This is why they used the 13th overall pick on him. That's just the way I see it with Frank.
Do you see him as like an Eric Halla type? Would that be a decent comp?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Okay. I love Eric Halla, so I think, you know, you got to have 12 forwards, 12, 13 forwards, Belcher team. So if he's in the pros,
yeah,
I'm fine with that.
And I think he could be definitely a guy you love to have on your team in the playoffs. I just don't know if he's going to be, you know, a 50-ish point type of forward at his peak.
Okay.
You talk to folks in the Blackhawks organization, and they are really excited about what they've seen from Sam Rinzell. Where you had him ranked before he was drafted to where you have him now, has he surprised you with his development?
Absolutely. I mean, you saw him at times in his draft year, and you saw the talent. Like, he's big, and he can skate, he has some skill. But there were even some high school games you would watch him where he wasn't super impressive. Heck, even in the year after his draft in USHL, there were some real rough nights when you went to go watch him, whether, you know, playing with Waterloo or for Team USA at the World Junior A Challenge. I thought he just looked like a very tools guy. You weren't sure on the hockey sense, weren't sure on the defending. And there's really, since he went to Minnesota that freshman year, he was really impressive. Took on a lot of responsibility, and this year he's been one of the very best defensemen in college hockey. And now you're looking at a guy with that size, with the skating, with the skill, and he can move a puck. And I don't know if he's going to be the premier defender at the next level, but with his tools, he's shown he can make stops, he can play tough minutes. And he looks like a guy who is trending towards being a legit top four defenseman in the NHL right now, and I expect he will get NHL games as soon as next season.
Oh, that was going to be my next question. Do you think it's better for him to turn pro at the end of this year, or could he be one of those guys with benefits from only playing two games and hitting the weight room and staying another year at Minnesota?
Well, it's not just, you know, it's been 3 years since his draft, too. He did get the full extra year of junior after that. So I think you got to think of him developmentally as a guy who's been in college for 3 years. When you think of just the age when first-round picks come out of school, maybe he needs to get some American League time. I mean, there's no need to rush. We presume Chicago will still probably not going to be a team pushing for the playoffs probably next year. So, that, you know, if you don't feel he's ready, he's not ready. But, I mean, the way he's developing right now, he looks like a very impressive pro prospect.
Your thoughts on what you've seen from Drew Commesso so far in the AHL, and does any goalie have a first-round grade or ranking in this upcoming draft?
I mean, I think Josh Ravensburg is going to be a first-round pick. I think he's just talking to teams. I think he can go even well in the first round. A 6'5", super athletic goalie. Reminds me a lot of Sebastian Kosa when he was in the Western League. And I think you're looking at that range, 15 to 25 for Ravensburg. And you know, I think, you know, Commesso, he's a good goalie, just doesn't have that kind of athletic profile. He's, you know, average size, you know, good quickness, good hockey sense. I think you're hoping for maybe a backup goalie, a tandem type goalie if he hits. But I don't think in the organization, you know, Adam Guyon's kind of had the struggles there in college. I think Chicago's still looking for their goalie of the future at the moment, just looking at what they have in the pipeline.
All right. Well, you do great work, Corey Bronman. We really appreciate you taking time to join us tonight. We will be in touch, considering where we're standing right now in the NHL standings. We'll hopefully converse another time or so as we get closer to that NHL.
We'll probably be talking to you for the next 3-4 years.
Well, yeah. I think most fans are very happy when they no longer have to hear from me. But I appreciate the call.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Corey.
That's Corey Prommen, prospect analyst for The Athletic. It's time for us to give away. Four Winds Casino is giving away a $200 gift card. Be caller number 10 to win right now. You must be 21 or older, and you must live in Illinois, Indiana, or Michigan. That's a Four Winds Casino $200 gift card. Be caller 10 at 312-332-3776. We will tell you the winner of that gift card and wrap up the hockey show on ESPN 1000 after this.
The Hockey Show. Pat Boyle hosts Chicago's only show dedicated to hockey fans. The Hockey Show on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Welcome back to The Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. Barstool Chief Pat Boyle with you. We're here every Wednesday night, 8 to 9. Congratulations to our Four Winds Casino $200 gift card winner, Karen from Garfield Ridge. She will be enjoying Four Winds Casino, and you and I will be doing a broadcast from Four Winds Casino mid-March, like right around tournament time, just after the NHL trade deadline.
Perfect. I love the Four Winds. The Four Winds is awesome, so I can't wait for that night.
All right, so it was a good week for Seth Jones. He had arguably his worst game as a Blackhawk last Monday. And then he put together three pretty good performances.
On the score sheet.
On the score sheet, defending better. But there's a lot of discussion as we approach that March 7th trade deadline. You know, people are talking about Taylor Hall attracting a lot of interest. Ryan Donato, who's having a career year. Both are on expiring contracts. Seth has a couple more years after this year. There was something that Biz put out there, and you wrote about it today in Barstool.
Yeah, Biz says that basically the Blackhawks are open for business for Seth Jones, that he is on the trade block. I don't think that that's necessarily surprising news. I had heard rumblings that they approach him because he has a full no trade. So I had heard that they approached him last summer being like, what do you want your future to be? And the feedback I got was that he was open to a trade, but he has that no movement clause. So he really only wants to go to a good team and a place that he wants to live. And if that team doesn't have the cap or the desire to get him, then he's not going to go. So the Hawks, I think they will have to eat 50% to make that deal happen. He's just not, he's not a $9.5 million defenseman, even with the cap going up. I would personally probably do it because you would think, you know, we just talked to Corey Promen about these guys who are coming, they're building this top four. They're a year or so away in most cases. What are you going to have, a $9.5 million player playing third line minutes, third pair minutes? So, so it's probably time. And then with that cap going up, they really only have one guy that they're going to have to give probably a $10 million plus contract to. That would be Connor Bedard. So I don't think the cap is ever going to be a concern. I don't think eating $4.75 million, which would be 50%, is going to be the type of number that prevents them from going out and getting, you know, what we were saying at the beginning of the show, a Rantanen or a Marner or something like that. They'll still have plenty of money. They have a ton of money coming off the books with these expiring deals, whether it's Alec Martinez and Maroon and Craig Smith and all these guys, all the mercenary type guys, that the money is just not going to be an issue. It's just if you're trying to build something new and get fresh blood in there and create minutes and opportunities for these younger players that you've drafted, somebody has to be moved out. And I do think probably Murphy will get moved out at some point, either this deadline or in the summer. And then, you know, I think they'll work hard to try to get a Jones.
I believe they have two salaries that they can retain money on. So, I mean, again, if you're going to move Seth, like you said, you're going to have to retain at least half of that.
Yep.
And I did hear Toronto was looking for a right-handed defenseman. Look, we talked. The one thing I do wonder as we talk about this rebuild, do I think Seth's going to be a part of this team big picture? No. So, but, you know, when you move him on, move away from him, who's replacing him for the time being? And what is that doing to Vlasic or whoever else is out there with Seth's replacement?
My answer? Who cares? Who cares?
Well, we just got over talking about Connor Bedard and how down he was and how at least Anders has unlocked something. And while they're still not winning a ton of games, he's producing and he's developing. So doesn't that go for other players like Alex Vlasic? And
I think Vlasic is a guy who can exist on an island. To me, he's already a top pair guy. Does he need a Seth Jones playing with him? I personally don't think so. You know, and they do have other, they have other young guys, and they're not trying to win. So I don't think Vlasic's development or production or anything is going to be limited by having Seth Jones or removing Seth Jones. It might actually increase it because when Seth Jones was out, he got that top power play.
Yeah, he did play better when Seth was injured.
So I think, you know, and they have Kaiser also there who's capable of playing third line minutes. I liked that kid Del Mastro when he was up last year. He's been in Rockford again.
How about Louis Crevier? Has he turned your attention
there? He looks like a guy who can be a 6'7" kind of defenseman. That wasn't even a pun about his height, but he can be a third line guy. And you know, and it, not to say he's going to be Chara, but it took Chara a long time to kind of get his feet under him as a 6'9" defenseman and become that Norris shutdown, you know, captain type guy. And again, I don't think Crevier is that, but he could be a useful NHL player. And these guys, like I said earlier, I want the guys who are going to be here for the long run to be given the responsibility of creating the culture for the room. And if that means removing a voice and minutes like Seth Jones, I think that that could be ultimately a positive. And I don't dislike Seth Jones. I like him more than most of the fan base does, I think. But I just think the experiment with him hasn't worked out. I liked the trade when it happened because I thought that might give us, you know, some meaningful hockey with Taves and Kane, maybe sneak into a wild card and get a playoff series at the end of those 8-year deals. So I was all for it. It just didn't work out. So it's time to find plan B, C, D, whatever they're on now, and maybe find him a fresh home and a fresh start.
Our thanks to producer Kevin Zipak and Sean Graney. Thanks to our guest, Corey Pronman from The Athletic. Blackhawks are back in action Friday night at the United Center. They're in the midst of 8 straight against teams in the playoff mix. They'll have the Lightning coming up.
That should be fun.
At 7 o'clock on Friday. That is going to do it for this edition of The Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. For Barstool Chief and everybody on the Hockey Beat, happy Ben Johnson Day, everybody. Enjoy it, Chicago. We'll catch you next time.